Bolton's fellow bully in Bolton. That's up at Consortium Other Places. She's the author of a number of books, and they include Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. You can check her website out, MarjorieCohn.com. We thank you for joining us on Flashpoints. We're out.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Stage and Studio presents the recently rediscovered documentary from D. May Roberts, Rajneesh Puram, What Price Paradise. Produced in 1986, this project on the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh was thought to have been lost, but was found thanks to KBOO's archive project. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. To keep informed and get involved, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Inner City Blues Festival on Saturday, April 21st from 5:30 to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. For the past 7 years, the Inner City Blues Festival has focused on healing the healthcare blues, supporting Oregon's universal healthcare movement. Performers this year include the Norman Sylvester Review with Sarah Billings and Leanne Miller, the King Louis Payne Quartet and LaRonda Steele, and many, many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival on Saturday, April 21st from 5:30 to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue at Lombard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Eco Film Festival's Earth Day weekend celebration from April 20th through the 22nd at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival features films about the environment, nature conservation, outdoor adventure, agriculture, and community wellness. This Earth Day weekend celebration is 4 screenings over 3 days featuring the films The Reluctant Radical, Beyond the Big Fish, and more. Again, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival's Earth Day weekend celebration from April 20th through the 22nd at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from PDX Bendables, Stage and Studio Supplies. PDX Bendables sells and rents to film and theater productions, from gel and globes to paint and lights. They can be reached at 503-887-5880 or their online store at pdxbendables.com.
I'm Dime Roberts. We're about to hear something I thought I had lost forever. In 1986, I produced my very first one-hour documentary. I was fresh out of college and trying to make a living as a freelance producer, so I pitched big ideas, and this one was big. The experimental commune of Rajneeshpuram was falling apart, so I wrote a proposal and got an NPR Satellite Program Development Fund grant, known as SPDF back then, from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, to produce this documentary. But I admit the project was daunting, especially since it was my first full-length documentary. I owe a lot of thanks to the radio reporters who reported on it from the very beginning: Tom Goldman, Tony Brooks, Mark Roberts, Jazz Sound, and Oregonian reporter Jeannie Sr., and especially to my first engineer and co-producer, Ron Royer, who made it possible for me to have a career in radio. But you and I wouldn't have heard this broadcast were it not for KBOO, KBOO, and its archival consultant, Selena Chow. Because I searched and searched all the tape reels I had stored in cardboard boxes in my basement, and I had resigned myself that it was forever lost. Then Selena emailed me and asked me this question: did you produce this documentary of Rajneeshpuram? She had found it from the KBOO broadcast archives from 1986. I used the name D. Roberts back then, and keep in mind, my voice sounds very, very young. But I hope you enjoy this broadcast of the newly found Rajneeshpuram, What Price Paradise, narrated by actor Bill Douglas.
They came from India seeking a new home for their religion. They wanted to build an oasis in the desert. The Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh and his 15 disciples in designer red clothes were first greeted with amusement by the ranchers and retirees of Central Oregon, but as his paradise grew to a city of 6,000, so did hostility. What followed was an exercise of intolerance. Conservative country folk versus the aggressive, well-financed newcomers. 4 years later, the Bhagwan's paradise ended with him drifting in exile from country to country, finally settling in Uruguay, a distant, less appealing new Mecca. The story of Rajneeshpuram is an odyssey whose cast of players begins with a small, charismatic man in India who came to adopt the name Bhagwan Sri, meaning blessed one.
This is my circus, my carnival. And I enjoy it immensely.
With Ma Anand Sheela, whose rapid rise to power depended on bringing the Rajneesh to America, and whose defiance enabled a city to grow quickly while alienating all of Oregon.
I'm fearless woman. Let them be afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I live with the people. Look at it. Beautiful people I live with. Why should I be afraid?
With the press aides, who called themselves Twinkies because they acted as hostesses to the curious.
We never call the press. We have press coming out of our ears. We could care less if you show up or not. We have created a society that we have chosen to live in. If you don't like the society that we have chosen to live in, you don't have to come and visit it.
With the Central Oregon residents who survived an invasion of the red shirts, the mass dumping of street people, an arson fire, a salmonella epidemic, and murder attempts.
If we were as bigoted and prejudiced as they say we are, they'd have never got a start here. We took them at their word, you know. They were just good people wanting to start a little farm out there in the country and have what they call their own religion. Weren't going to bother nobody. Been far from that. If we take them at their word now, we have to believe they're going to do everything they can to hurt us.
And at the end of Paradise Row were the sannyasins, followers of Rajneesh, whose energy and brute strength built the city of Rajneeshpuram.
Rajneeshpuram, What Price Paradise? The story of an experiment that failed. Produced by D. Roberts. With narration by Bill Douglas. Part 1. The Building of a City.
The balding man with a flowing white beard, glassy eyes, and a whimsical smile was a mystic who preached free love. A self-styled guru for the rich whose religion remained a mystery to most Americans. He immersed himself with a fleet of 93 Rolls-Royces and admirers who were largely white, Western, and affluent. What was his appeal? How did people come to share his paradise? Born 54 years ago in India, Mohan Chandra Rajneesh claims he gained enlightenment like Buddha at age 21 while sitting under a tree. In the mid-70s, he established an ashram in Pune, a religious commune where followers could study in the presence of their master. His marathon discourses were transcribed into over 350 books. He used hypnosis, taught yoga and meditation, and held controversial, no-holds-barred sex therapy groups. His free love philosophy and therapy sessions drew Western soul searchers looking for unrestrained emotional release. There were reports of broken bones, nudity, and rape during these sessions until commune officials put a ban on violent behavior. Most followers seemed to be former graduates of the 70s human potential movement. He talked of shedding societal taboos and ridding oneself of guilt, an appealing message to Western minds, uneasy with their Christian upbringing. Here the Bhagwan describes his idea of deprogramming.
I am simply deprogramming and then leaving you alone to your own consciousness, your awareness, and to do whatsoever your insight allows you. It is you who have to be decisive about yourself. Neither Jesus, nor Buddha, nor me. Nobody is going to dominate and manipulate you like a puppet. A deep programmed person is one who is no more a puppet, who has declared his independence from the bogus God and his prophets, messiahs, and incarnations.
They gave up their names, and though it wasn't required, their material wealth. In return, they took sannyas, a ritual of renouncing the world. They adopted an Indian name, orange and red clothes, and a beaded necklace called the mala, bearing a picture pendant of the Bhagwan. Women became ma, or mother, and men became swami, or lord. Swami Anandvade explains sannyas as a way of shedding one's past life.
What a lot of us are doing with Bhagwan is to try to identify what the person is like when you take away all the veneer that comes as a part of being a member of a family and a society and a religion and a culture and an economy. I'm not my job. I'm not my religion. I'm not my culture. Sannyas is the last game, and it's very much a game for me. This clothes, this name, this place, it's just another society, but it's a conscious choice to be in this society. It's a conscious costume, but for me, it's the last one. I didn't choose any of the other ones. I chose this one. And to me, the transition is from this one into no one.
Sannyasins studied dynamic meditation, intense physical exertion followed by stillness. Rajneesh said this type of meditation allows Westerners to concentrate after first becoming physically exhausted. Rajneesh said he was creating a new man called Zorba the Buddha, a wedding of Zorba the Greek, the earthy, sensual, common man who danced away troubles, and the spiritual Buddha. Western materialism and Eastern spirituality created a sensual, comfortable world with no guilt, a world that mingled gourmet food and designer clothes with spiritual awakening. When asking sannyasins about their lives, they say they're happy just to be near Rajneesh.
How can you explain life? Life needs to be lived totally, with joy in the heart and gratefulness.
Religions have become dead. Religions have become guilt-oriented. They've become political structures. They've become a lot of things besides spiritual transformations. Bhagwan said, live, love, and laugh.
It's like living with Christ, the living Christ, walking by his side, sitting down with him, listening to him, rather than with a religion which is being established by a pope. I consider the Pope to be dead.
Rajneesh never claimed to be God, but an enlightened master such as Buddha, Jesus, or Muhammad. When wanting to create controversy, he attacks popes, priests, politicians, and even Mother Teresa. He defends his flashy cars, designer robes, and wristwatches by saying that established religion, not he, is the cause of poverty.
I know why they are suffering there. They are suffering there because of your priests and your politicians. Still, all the religions are against birth control methods. They want abortion to be made illegal. And abortion should not only be legal, it should be rewarded. You should stop giving Nobel Prizes to criminals like Mother Teresa, who is increasing the world population by saving the orphans. The Pope, the Pollock, continuously says that these children are sent from God. So we cannot prevent them. This poverty that you see on the earth, I am not responsible for it. If the world listens to me, this poverty can disappear immediately.
By 1980, Rajneesh Foundation had over $1 million and the Pune Ashram was bustling with followers. The Indian government pressured them to pay more taxes. Rumor had it that Rajneesh wanted to find a new site for a city of 100,000 followers. A power struggle ensued between then-personal secretary Ma Yoga Lakshmi and Ma Anand Sheela, her assistant. Sheela, a permanent U.S. resident, convinced the Bhagwan she could get him into the U.S. Soon, Sheela gained a promotion as his new secretary. Claiming diabetes, asthma, and back problems to get a temporary visa, Rajneesh secretly fled to the United States owing India $4 million in back taxes. August 1981, the Bhagwan and his entourage landed on over 64,000 acres of overgrazed ranch land called the Big Muddy Ranch, once owned by John Wayne. A lone dirt road 20 miles long wove through the immense desert rangeland, dotted with sagebrush and surrounded by steep canyon walls and spires of stone. The new site was a vast contrast to the lushness of Pune. A disappointed Rajneesh reportedly broke his vow of silence and asked, "Where are the trees?" The Rajneeshis insisted they were there to rejuvenate the useless ranch land, zoned to graze only one cow per 225 acres. Press aide Ma Ananda Sarita was one of the first sannyasins to come to the ranch.
We wanted a place that had been abused by man that we could reclaim and make a model community, so we could show the world that look what you can do in a desert. Look what you can do if you use technology in a very positive sense. You can take any place and make it into a paradise. And literally, that's Bhagwan's teaching. Take your desert, take your situation, take your life, and make it into a paradise right now. Don't wait for some future heaven. Bring your heaven right here. He's always said that if his sannyasins go to hell, they're going to turn hell into heaven. Just by their presence, they'll clean it up, make it really nice, and turn it into a heaven. So that's the way we live our lives.
They planted thousands of trees, grew vegetables, and put up mobile homes as more sannyasins journeyed to the commune. An experiment was being created, and dreams of living in a perfect society with their master drew sannyasins to the remote desert. Soon the ranch resembled a summer work camp. Sannyasins ate vegetarian meals at Mary Magdalena Cafeteria and slept in shared housing in Alan Watts Canyon or Walt Whitman Grove, while the leaders lived in the more luxurious Jesus Grove. They began their mornings with meditation and worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. They called their work worship, a term outsiders had a hard time understanding. The concept of work as worship is a process, says Sarita, not an end.
Sannyasins, whenever they work, they use the work as a meditation. And the important thing about the work is the process, or the love and the care that's put into it. So what I'm taking away with me is not the physical manifestation of this place. What I'm taking away with me is the experience of working together with people in a loving environment and what I've learned from that.
While his followers worked, Rajneesh spent his days swimming, meditating, and driving his Rolls Royces. He lived in a spacious home on the forested hills of Lao Tzu Grove. He had an indoor swimming pool and a garden full of white peacocks. Every day, he made one trip down to the valley to see his followers.
So, at this time, around 2 o'clock, we see the master drive by. Whoever wants to come lines up, and you will see him driving by.
Each day, all the sannyasins would line the main road of the commune, waiting for the Bhagwan and his security entourage to drive by. Here, press aide Ma Anand Bhagwati describes the drive-by spectacle.
People are playing music, singing, dancing, clapping. There's a whole air of celebration in the air. And we're just having fun, a party every day.
Dancing wildly and singing folksy camp songs dedicated to their leader, Rajneesh drove slowly by, his hands keeping time with the music. The commune provided a safe haven for people escaping the realities of the world. Most were young, white, educated international travelers turning in their white-collar jobs for a simpler life driving a tractor or tending chickens, cows, and emus. In listening to Ma Anand Bhagwati, there is a sense that most were seeking a community of caring people.
People just need something to hang up their own violence and their own anger they have captured inside. And if they feel to be in their own misery, to be in their own fear, to be locked up in their anxiety, then it's up to them. But on the other hand, they can come down here and see that people are able to live in harmony, caring for each other, loving each other, supporting each other. And the whole world could live in a different way. If you look around, there's hate and anger everywhere. Now, this is one of the few places in the whole world where this is not happening.
But there was no love to spare when it came to the area residents. They seemed self-centered when dealing with the older, more staid ranchers and retirees around them. At first, the red shirts bemused the Oregonians who watched the silent guru speed down country roads in his many Rolls Royces. They were pleased that someone finally had a use for the Big Muddy Ranch. When the commune grew, and the Rajneeshis started taking an interest in town politics, the inevitable clash took place. Former Mayor Margaret Hill worried more about bake sales and city council attendance before the Rajneeshis came.
This is a retirement community. How can people whose average age is probably 65 cope with and live with this kind of group?
Perhaps the Rajneeshis would not have moved into Antelope had no one challenged their desire to build a city on their own land. But the Bhagwan had applied for permanent residency status, and it appeared he was here to stay. This didn't sit well with area residents, especially when the odd-looking strangers began buying up buildings like the General Store, which they turned into the vegetarian Zorba the Buddha Cafe. They heard murmurings of strange religious cults and sex orgies. Residents like Robert Osborne weren't thrilled after a 60 Minutes news report featuring scenes from the movie Ashram showing violent acts during a Poona therapy session.
They disbelieve in our God, what we believe in, and we've been taught all of our lives. They believe their God lives out there with them. It's a free sex outfit, as far as I can get, and that's what they do for pastime.
A Thousand Friends of Oregon, a liberal environmental group, jumped in and charged that the Rajneeshis could not form a city on their own land. They claimed it violated Oregon land use laws prohibiting urban uses of farmland. A Thousand Friends told the Rajneeshis that they wanted city services, they would have to locate them in an already established city. Antelope residents like Bob Stubbs began fearing a takeover of their town.
Come back home, I found the most remote place I could find out of the way, raise a family, and try to influence my children. And I get here and get settled down, and damned if a whole tribe of hippies don't move on my back porch, you know.
Don Smith, like most residents, was afraid of losing his low cost of living.
They can raise the taxes to us through improvements like sewer systems, water systems, streets, whatever, to where we really could not afford to live here.
In 4 years, Antelope City property taxes jumped from zero to almost $20 per $1,000 of property. The fear of tax increases forced Antelope to consider dissolving a town that has been around since the turn of the century rather than let the Rajneeshis develop. Margaret Hill.
The purpose of this meeting is to consider a petition which has been filed requesting disincorporation of the city and an early election.
The Rajneeshis resented this thorn to progress. Sannyasin Mashanti Bhadra, a close confidant to Sheila, expressed the Rajneeshis' need for quick development.
As the ranch grew, it became obvious that we needed to provide a lot of services for the people on the ranch, and so we had hoped that our incorporation would happen and we could move everything. What with the opposition that we've come up against, it's taking a long time, it's dragging out, and the way we move is fast. Life is very short, we have a lot to do.
April 1982, national attention focused on Antelope as the vote to dissolve their city failed 55-42. Soon, Sheila and the top leaders of the commune would begin to dominate the Antelope City Council. Taxes went up, street signs and buildings were renamed after poets and philosophers, and the original residents of Antelope began moving out till only 15 remained. A month after the Antelope vote, the Rajneeshis voted 154-0 to form a new city on the ranch property. Now the Rajneeshis had two cities to control, Antelope and Rajneeshpuram. This began a string of court battles questioning the separation of church and state. Rajneeshpuram would always be challenged as a legitimate city. Summer 1982, Rajneeshpuram held its first week-long world festival. At that time claiming 200,000 followers, the festival was a way of bringing disciples to pay tribute both spiritually and financially to Rajneesh. Those who came brought donations, paid for room and board, and took expensive therapy courses at the Rajneesh University. They said it was love that brought them by the thousands and filled the hot, dusty streets of Rajneeshpuram with incessant laughter.
The love is incredible here. I have never felt it anywhere else, really. The openness, the awareness, the sharing between people, the unconditional love. You can be vulnerable. You don't have to close up. You can just be totally open in who you are and not worry about being judged. It's really beautiful.
Love and a lot of sharing and an experience that you can't find anywhere else.
It's an experience not to be missed. I would love for all my friends to come here and just experience it. Instead of just wondering and asking me, and I just love for them to all come and share in the celebration and just enjoy.
Look at the life here. Do you ever see life like this anywhere? It's alive, it's always new. You never know what's gonna happen. It's always exciting. It's always a little bit scary. And it's wonderful.
It's a celebration. We can celebrate life here with all the people who can appreciate what Bhagwan's message is and share in the love and the joy that we love to share. Yeah.
The festival was a financial success, proving Rajni's program's draw as a mecca. Till now, Sheila had kept a low profile, leaving all press duties to public relations director Ma Prem Isabel. According to Sannyasins, Sheila ran the commune. As president of the Rajneesh Foundation International and the Rajneesh Humanity Trust, her strength and status grew beyond the perimeters of a personal secretary. Most of the Rajneeshi top echelon were women. The Bhagwan said this was a way of making up for past wrongs.
I love women. And I want to give them all that in the whole history of man has been taken away from them. This is just a little compensation. All the women are running the whole circus of mine. And they are doing it beautifully.
For most, power was a new experience.
They thought they were much better than you, always. You know, you were down there somewhere, but they were far superior. This was their attitude.
Jean Oprey had moved to Antelope about the same time as the Bhagwan. She recalls harassment by the Rajneesh Purim Peace Force.
If you had company, they would go by and take the license number. While you had company, they would constantly, go by, just very, very harassingly. And when they would leave, they would follow them out of town to see where they were going. And if anybody going through town did the least thing wrong, they got a ticket. Things like that that are ridiculous, that just don't happen any other place.
Oprey says the Rajneeshis were constantly staking out the mayor's house. One day, in protest, Jim Oprey carried a picket sign reading, "Patrol Car Harassment." Soon afterward, Mrs. Oprey received a letter about Jim from top Rajneeshi lawyer Swami Prem Nuran.
We got a letter from the Rajneesh lawyer telling me that he was crazy. And, you know, if I didn't commit him, they would, because he walked up and down in front of the store with a picket sign. And have you seen the way they dance sometimes in their, and they could say he was crazy for walking up and down with a sign.
Jim Oprey's protest signs eventually got him arrested by the Rajneesh Purim Peace Force, who entered the Oprey home without a warrant. Later, charges were dropped. The Opreys were not the only Antelope residents to fight back. There were libel and defamation suits waged by residents and Rajneeshis alike, but only the Rajneeshis, with a well-staffed legal service, could afford to use lawsuits as a way of intimidating their critics. As Argonians soon learned, the supposedly peace-loving children of paradise were not adverse to fighting back when they felt threatened. Press aide Ma Prem Sunshine.
But we have life threats daily. Our kids are having threats against them for being kidnapped, and our water supply is being threatened to be poisoned, and our dam is threatened to being bombed. There's security on every corner, and that security is not an offensive but a defensive. If something were to happen, we're prepared for it. We're not here to hurt anybody, and that's the only way we know how to deal with it.
July 1983, a bomb exploded at the Hotel Rajneesh in Portland, over 170 miles from Rajneesh Purim. The explosion touched off their worst fears, leading to the creation of Rajneesh Security, a 150-member private security force. Within a few weeks after the bombing, paranoia heightened during the summer festival. Rajneesh Purim became a rigidly guarded armed camp. The security force was equipped with everything from Uzi submachine guns to semi-automatic assault rifles. On the dirt road to the ranch, drivers had to pass through four guard posts. License numbers were radioed ahead to the next post. Argonia newspaper reporter and Central Oregon resident Jeannie Sr. wrote one of the first accounts of the Rajneeshis. She made dozens of trips to Rajneesh Purim over the 4 years, always amazed at the security measures the commune took.
My luggage was searched. My car was searched. They had a dope-sniffing dog, and the dog sniffed out the car, and they did a very cursory search of my car. But on the other hand, I've seen other people drive in there and have their cars totally taken apart. How many other cities do you know of where you have to be searched before you can stay in the only hotel in town? There always was the feeling when I stayed down there, which was later justified, that my phone was being tapped. The Hotel Rajneesh phones we felt were certainly tapped. We felt the payphones at Rajneeshwaram were tapped, possibly the phones in Antelope also. I felt intimidated when they started having the guns visible and they started using the sniper rifle and the helicopter. Rajneesh security was omnipresent.
The Rajneeshis often made a show of their weapons, even during a press conference. Even Ma Anand Sheela occasionally took to sporting a pistol on her hip. Sheila's denunciation of residents became increasingly vehement. She would emerge as the volatile queen of the press conference. Her statements enraged Oregonians, but also created a buttress against those who opposed Rajneeshpuram.
You're listening to Rajneeshpuram, What Price Glory on KBOO.
The Rajneeshis spent $110 million building a city where none had stood before. A city with a dam and water reservoir, a shopping mall, discos and a gambling casino, a hotel, an airport, a bus system, and a completely self-sufficient farm, as well as living quarters to accommodate 6,000 people. For the Rajneeshis, the building of this city was their shining hour. The next 2 years would bring ugly confrontations between Rajneeshis and the Central Oregon residents, combining with a power struggle inside the commune that caused the eventual disintegration of Rajneeshpuram. Fall, 1984. Rajneeshpuram embarks on the Shera Home Project, beginning a chain of events triggering its own destruction. The question still remains, just how much did the guru know of the events of the next 2 years? But it was Ma Anand Sheela who would be blamed for criminal acts and the decline of the commune. Described by